is your host, TJ Buchenbarger.
Thank you, Beth. Coming to you live here from the Engine Pro Studios just outside of Grand Rapids, Michigan. Once again here, Monday night, getting ready for to talk about some big news that was announced last week. The World of Outlaws are coming to the Berlin Raceway just down the street here from our headquarters here just outside of Grand Rapids. We mapped it about 15 miles, taking the freeway over to Berlin. But my first guest tonight is even closer. He is the closest guest proximity-wise we've ever had on the show. But you wouldn't know it because you've seen him around speedways all over North America. Alan Brown is joining us. And Alan, when this Outlaw show was announced, you're the first person I wanted to have on because a lot of our national audience, especially our dirt friends, might have heard about Berlin Raceway, but they might not know the history or why it's so revered in this area and maybe even all over the country.
Well, that's for sure. Berlin, it's close to home to me. I grew up 6 miles north of there, and my dad started taking me there in the early 50s. The track actually opened in 47. Everybody kind of listed it as 1951, but it did run for a couple of years under the name of Marne Speedway in 1947 and 1948. Chet Meisselwick came along and added the fifth mile dirt on the inside in 1951 and started racing it on the small dirt track in 51 at that period of time. And it's been known as Berlin Raceway ever since 1951. So, and it's a neat track. I grew up with the fifth mile, and then they started running the half mile, which is right now it's called a 7/16. And back in the 50s, the original horse track was actually a large half mile. Some people called it a 5/8. But they didn't really run on that track until about 1957 or 58. Actually, that was the original track that they ran, the group that ran in 1947. They ran on the half mile. But it was 1958 that they started running pretty much weekly racing on the half mile. Before that, it was only on the fifth mile. There's been a number of different sprint car groups over the years. USAC ran there. There was the first sprint car group that ever ran there was called AARC, and I think it's All American Race Club or something like that. And that was 1958. I think I got like 30 sprint car races have been run there on the old dirt track.
And people now will always comment about the unusual shape of the current Berlin Raceway, but that half mile was pretty unusually shaped too.
They used to say it had five corners. Parnelli Jones came and ran a couple of times back in the 50s, and he was one of the first ones to come back after practice. This thing's got five corners on it, and he was pretty much right. What happened is that there was like a kink down the front straightaway. And you went straight, and then you kinked, and you went straight, and then you had about a 90-degree turn going into turn one, and then turn two was probably a 70-degree turn. Turn three was a 70-degree turn, and then last corner again was about 90 degrees. So turn two, turn five were pretty much 90-degree corners.
It's pretty amazing. And of course, the track was paved and shortened eventually into its current configuration.
Yeah.
And, it had a good super modified boom era, which kind of helped establish it. But also, which era do you think maybe cemented Berlin's national legacy? The super modified era, or maybe the era where the ASA and the stock car stars of that era?
I think it was the stock car. Yeah. Starting in about 1969. By the time Berlin back in the 60s, early 60s, was really one of the best tracks in Michigan at that time as far as the top super modified drivers. But at that period of time, they didn't travel that much. I mean, the guys who ran on dirt, which which it was, wasn't traveling that much. They primarily stayed in Michigan. The pavement guys back at that period of time, like Gordy Johncock and Nellie Ward and Art Bennett and those guys, they were actually traveling. They were going up to New York. They were going down in Ohio. They had a number of different tracks that they'd run at. But the guys who ran Berlin pretty much stayed in. They were from the state. There was quite a few drivers from the Saginaw area. Johnny Roberts and Dick Carter, Jimmy Nelson was from Flint. Those three guys would come over and run with our Grand Rapids and Muskegon area drivers, you know, quite a bit, and won quite a bit. So,
and of course, you know, when I think of, you know, when I grew up, you know, I think of Berlin, I think of ASA and Butch Miller,
right,
and all those type,
exactly,
people. And that's probably where a lot of our audience today would probably have heard of Berlin Raceway at this point. It's from the ASA boom,
right,
era.
Where it
was the place to go see ASA pretty much. I mean, I remember I went to one ASA show, and it was a lot of, like, the atmosphere I'd say that's at like maybe a Big World of Outlaws show, where, I don't know, the whole place would just felt electric during those races.
Right, exactly. What was interesting is that the late models, what we're familiar with, they actually evolved from what a class called semi-lates that used to run at the Grand Rapids Speedrome. They actually ran on the other side of the state, Flat Rock, Mount Clemens, and Dixie, and like that. They ran over there as a semi-late model, and then back then they were 57 Chevys a lot, or 55 Chevys, or whatever, Buicks and big Fords, and anyway, they slowly evolved, and by the time Berlin paved, which is 1966, that was actually the first year that they ran a weekly program of late models, and at that time they were called semi-late models. And by 1969, we had some of the fastest short track late models in the country that was running at Berlin with Ed Howe and Bob Seneker and Butch. Well, Butch came a little bit later in 69, but Tommy Meyer, I mean, it was just unreal. The races that we had, and at that time, they used to have a lot of traveling guys. We'd get Tommy Colella and Bud Middle from Pittsburgh that would come over here and run at the big shows. And Don Gregory from Ohio would come up, and Moose Myers. And so we had a bunch of out-of-staters that would come in to try to beat our locals, which were pretty darn hard to beat when you had, you know. And by that time, Johnny Benson had switched over from the super modifieds and was primarily running the late models. Only, you know, after the super modifieds stopped running at Berlin basically after the accident in 1968. So they did run a few times in 69, but after that it was only on special events.
And let's get ahead a little bit forward here. We've had the pavement era for Berlin for a while. A couple of years ago, mm-hmm. new management announces they're going to put dirt on in the fall.
Right.
And what was your first reaction when you heard the announcement that they were officially going to put dirt on Berlin in the fall?
Well, it had been done. Of course, the very famous one is Bristol. Bristol, Tennessee, put the dirt on their half mile and ran some sprints and late models down there. But other tracks had done it. Elko Speedway up in Minnesota had been doing it. And what they do is they do it in the middle of the summer, of all things. They run pavement at the beginning of the year. They run for about 2 weeks on the dirt in the middle of summer, and then they finish the year out in pavement. And we were kind of surprised at Berlin when I heard that they were doing it at the end of the year. It's that I understand, but a lot of people were wondering, would they continue it and then leave the dirt on over the winter and then run a few races first part of the year and then do it again, later, pavement all the rest of the year. But, it's interesting that they're just doing it for the end of the year and then they take the pavement off or take the dirt off the pavement and do it again. I mean, but yeah, there are other tracks. I guess the most interesting track right now is the track down in South Carolina, Myrtle Beach Speedway. I was there many moons ago when it was a dirt track. Then they made it, well, it was a paved track, then they made it into a dirt track, then they made it into a paved track, then they made it into a dirt track, and back, it's back to a paved track right now, and it's been paved for about 10 years or 15 years or something. So, you know, a lot of times when they make a paved track into a dirt, all they do is covering it up with the dirt, which is exactly what Berlin does, and they just scrape it off, and they've got the pavement track again. So,
and I remember seeing, I remember seeing you last year at the SOD show, and we sat down, and you were the one that, of course, started the National Sprint Car Annual and the and continued it, and then the National Speedway Directory. But we were sitting down next to each other, which is odd because most of my life you were roaming the grandstands peddling the books, but we actually got to sit down in the grandstands last year at Berlin.
Right.
And first thing I said to you is, did you ever think we would see Lucas Wolf and Shane Stewart at Berlin Raceway in sprint cars?
No,
absolutely
not. Nope. I guess, you know, because normally once a track goes to pavement, it's quite rare that it switches back to dirt. Owosso Speedway did it. Owosso was a dirt track. They paved it, and then it went back to dirt, and then it's back to pavement again now. But very rarely does a paved track, once it's been paved, switches back to a dirt. That doesn't happen a lot.
And
especially in this case, I mean, one of the first tracks that I've ever heard that did this was Albany Saratoga Speedway up in New York. When I saw it back in the 60s, it was a paved track, and then they made it into a dirt track. Well, then a couple years ago, they went and tore the dirt off and ran one race at the end of the year on pavement. The next year, they put the dirt back on and they ran the race, and then they decided they took the dirt off again, and now it's a paved track. And in fact, I believe, I have to double check this, there is something I think Albany Saratoga is going to put the dirt back on again. It's back to a, oh no, I don't, it is so confusing. There's a bunch of tracks out there. Okay, Albany Saratoga went paved from 2009 and now it's back to dirt again.
Yeah, it seems like the ones that switch are always the ones that switch. Is basically
They go back and forth.
There's always a couple of them. In a Villa, when it was open, it went back and forth a couple of times, and a few tracks like that, you know. And there's always, you know, things like that. And you know, we were talking about that where we were joking we never thought we'd see that. Well, now we get to see Steve Kinzer, Sammy Swindell,
right.
Steve on his farewell tour, come to Berlin Raceway, and what a way to add to the track's legacy that's already star-studded. To have that, you know, Hall of Fame sprint car drivers coming in here in the fall, it's just going to be amazing.
Right, no doubt about it. We've had national drivers at Berlin before. It was interesting. In 1959, there was a USAC sprint car race, and it was won by Judd Larson. Two things of interest is that the fellow who finished second was our local hotshot, Johnny Roberts. Johnny finished second behind Judd Larson. Third was Bobby Grimm, and fourth was A.J. Foyt.
Wow. That's
a lot of people don't know that Foyt ran here. Yep. He got fourth. The interesting thing is Johnny Roberts, who was a track champion at Berlin and ended up winning like 30 or some races at Berlin. Finished second to Judd Larson.
Yeah, and finishing second to Judd Larson is not a, you know, it's not a bad thing.
Ooh, that's pretty darn good.
Yeah, so you know, as we mentioned, you were the proprietor of the National Speedway Directory, which anyone who's ever chased racetracks around the country had one of these in their console for sure. And it's every time, like I said, we saw you. You were with books, the History of American Speedways, or the Speedway Directory, or the Sprint Car Annual. But now, you know, you have kind of gone into a slower pace now these days, and you have other people doing the Speedway Directory.
Yeah, we're still going to races, but No more going through the grandstand, selling the books. I just sit tight, and we watch the races. And our last race was Saturday night down in Missouri. We went to a USCS sprint car show down in Missouri. We went to a couple modified shows over in Texas Thursday and Friday, and then froze our tushes off on Saturday night.
Yeah, well, and it's amazing to see you're still traveling. But like I said, it's still weird when I come across you a little bit to sit next to you in the grandstand. The
only right. Normally I'd only sit with somebody for a few minutes, and then I'd be on my way to, you know, to try to dig up more business, because what we had is our book was for the racer, for the race cars, for the drivers, for the fans, for officials, whatever. And it was something to help everybody. And so it was something that, you know, we pushed it so that everybody know that it was available, because like yourself, you know how, you know, if you did any bit of traveling, it was so helpful to have the directory, you know.
It was a lifesaver. One of my proudest moments was at Berlin Raceway, or actually at Butler Motor Speedway one night. I was announcing a whole night of racing, which I never did. It's the only time I ever did it. And I remember I got to pedal the book that night, which was kind of fun. So I got to plug it.
Yep.
I'm like, this is so cool. I get to actually do this tonight. So I got to plug the book. And I remember it was also the night I got my highest compliment as an announcer, because there was a two-car stock car race on the track.
Okay.
And one of them came down to, and a guy lost a wheel on the last lap. And I was like calling this thing like it was the Daytona 500 at the finish. And,
right.
And I remember you coming up going, I never dreamed you could get that excited about stock cars.
right.
And it was so much fun. But Alan, I can't thank you enough for all the work you've done over the years for people like me, and you made my job a thousand times easier. There's still sprint car annuals in paper form still sitting right here in the studio that we refer back to, and there's even still a speedway directory sitting in here. So I mean, your impact was well felt beyond multiple generations, and I can't thank you enough for the work that you did. And also on the History of American Speedways too. That's a great book as well.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's fun. In fact, I'm actually still updating it. Right now I'm going through and trying to figure out helping the fellow who has the directory now, and helping him trying to figure out which tracks are running, you know, or ran last year. In fact, I just found a track in Oklahoma that I thought it had closed in 2004, and it reopened last year. And you're going, wait a minute, you know, track has been sitting for almost 10 years, and now they reopened it again. So it's quite interesting.
Yeah,
so, what we still do is, in fact, we went and looked at three tracks that we had never seen before, two in Texas and one in Missouri.
Wait, those there are some you haven't seen, just to put it out?
There are a few, At the peak, I had probably saw 90% of the tracks that existed. I've just a little bit over 2,300 tracks. I mean, when you consider that there's only like 1,400 tracks, including drag strips and road courses in the country, and I've seen 2,300, that's because I've been doing it for 40-some years.
Sure.
And I'll, you know, I've seen probably 800, 900 tracks that are out of business, that are, you know, no longer. I mean, just in this area, you had the old Whiskey Ridge Speedway that used to run, you know. And in fact, my dad took me over there for the first time in the early 50s to see a race there.
Wow, that's just amazing. And you know, it's even more amazing now to think about this. You did this during the analog era. I mean, you know, where you couldn't just Google, hey, did this track run last week or something. I mean, you know, I remember the first copy of the Speedway directory my dad and I got was probably about 87 or so.
Right.
So I mean, you know, to compile all of that, you know, back before you could just go and look it up, it's just remarkable.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and that's what we did. We were kind of the predecessor of Google as far as the directories of the racetracks, because we dug them out. But you also got to remember that my original partner, Larry Yard, and myself, we traveled. And as we traveled, we we would, you know, somebody, oh, you forgot, you missed this track or you missed that track. Well, we would dig them up, you know, and there was all kinds of ways to do it without the internet. You know, you wrote letters, you made phone calls, and you just, I used to say what I had is I had a whole boat full of spies across the country. I had people that I could rely on, Gary Jacob on the West Coast, or Ron Rada on the West Coast, or Greg Fielding down in South Carolina, you know, of these race fans or officials and stuff like that, who would, we'd sit down and they'd tell me all about the tracks in their area and who to contact and this, that, and the other. So, I mean, I had like a regular network of what I called spies to keep me posted. In fact, I still have people that, you know, they find out a track that's just reopened or something, and they shoot me an email to let me know, hey, we got to, you know, because like two of the tracks that we went to over this weekend, one Timberline Speedway down in Maud, Texas, just opened last year. In fact, it's not even a year old, and here we're down watching a USMTS modified race down there on Friday night.
Just incredible. Alan, like I said, I appreciate everything you've done over the years, all your hard work, and just so you know, it didn't go unnoticed for sure, because it definitely helped shape a lot of my racing life, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate it.
It's been fun. It really has. So it's been a dream come true, probably, what I guess you, because I've always been a race fan, and basically it's just, you know, I just turned in what I always enjoyed to do, because before I had even got started on this, I had been to almost 100 different racetracks before I even started helping the fellow who actually started the book. Larry Yard started the book in 1972, and I met him that year at Avila Speedway, and I ran into him again at Berlin and at Rockford, Illinois, and we got talking, and I started helping him the very next year, and because I had already known, you know, tracks where he didn't know about, but heck, I bought, you know, he had 8 tracks listed in the originally called the Midwest Auto Racing Guide, and he had 8 tracks listed for Michigan. I said, heck, I've been to 20 of them Michigan myself, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So I helped him out and just took off from there.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, Alan, we're going to have you on again this winter for sure for some more racing talk, because this is way too much fun. But, hey, you know, September in Berlin, I can't wait for it. And like I said, I knew exactly who to call when this happened or when this was announced.
Alrighty.
I really appreciate it. Alan Brown, formerly the National Speedway Directory. I think he's still pretty much with the Speedway Directory, let's be honest. National Sprint Car Annual and the History of American Speedways. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have Craig Mintz on the show. You're listening to TJ Slideways Live here on Races on the web.
Engine Pro, the nation's leading specialty engine parts distributor, featuring name brand engine parts and custom engine kits sold by professional rebuilders. With 29 distribution centers providing engine builders and machine shops across the country with a full line of brand name internal engine components at competitive prices. Engine Pro is committed to building the success of their customers by offering competitive pricing, innovative programs, and knowledgeable sales representatives. For more information, visit our website at enginepro.com. It pays to know a pro. Engine Pro.
If you're looking to add a little edge to your racing program, repair your engine, maybe even look into a new engine, Bailey Racing Engines of Coldwater, Michigan is a fine supporter of TJSlideways.com. Visit them online at BaileyEngines.com or call them at 517-278-8488.
Tired of having black headers that rust and wear out too quickly? Then you need to get some Rocket Headers. Rocket Header produces exhaust for 360 and 410 sprint car engines, dirt and pavement, with mufflers and turnouts. Stainless steel construction, TIG welding, and polished finish make Rocket Headers the best value in the open wheel racing exhaust market. For more information on where to buy Rocket Headers, visit their official website at rocketheaders.com.
TJ Buffenbarger here for the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa. The Hall of Fame continues to promote the future of sprint car racing by preserving its past. The museum is located in Knoxville, Iowa, and is open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday from noon to 5 p.m. On race nights, the museum will stay open until 7 o'clock. Don't forget, race fans, one of the best ways that you can support the Hall of Fame is buying a membership. They start at just $25, and a basic membership gets you and a guest free admission to the museum and a 10% discount off in the museum store. Also, check with the Hall of Fame for suite tickets on the second and third floor for the 2013 Knoxville season. You can get information on all of this by going to SprintCarHOF.com, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame.
If you're looking for new or used shocks or repair for your shocks or bump stop kits, make sure to check out Slade Shock Technology. Eric Slade has experience from sprint cars to NASCARs. He was in shocks before it was trendy, and now that's the hot thing of racing. You need to get your shock program in shape. Visit www.sladeshocktechnology.com for everything they offer. Slade Shock Technology. Get with the program. Get your shocks in shape.
There's a buzz in the bleachers, a rumble on the pavement, and the sweet smell of sprint car speed is in the air as Muncie Racing brings you the fastest short track event on earth. Watch as the most daring lead butts in the land stand on the gas and rock it around one of the fastest half miles in America. There are records to be broken and racing royalty in the pits. It's a flat-out, foot-on-the-floor sprint car fiesta, and you can't find this brand of adrenaline-soaked action anywhere else.
Engine Pro, the nation's leading specialty engine parts distributor, featuring name brand engine parts and custom engine kits sold by professional rebuilders. With 29 distribution centers providing engine builders and machine shops across the country with a full line of brand name internal engine components at competitive prices. Engine Pro is committed to building the success of their customers by offering competitive pricing, innovative programs, and knowledgeable sales representatives. For more information, visit our website at EngineProParts.com. It pays to know a pro. Engine Pro.
Welcome back to TJ Sideways Live here on RacesOnTheWeb.com. My next guest, defending Attica Raceway Park track champion and decal guy, designer, basketball coach, just all-around good guy, Craig Mintz, who makes his annual March visit to the TJ Sideways Live program. And Craig, it's not by coincidence we have you on every March because it's about the time Attica gets rolling. There's March Madness going on, so we have to combine a lot of your passions into one visit here.
Yeah, I mean, I love basketball and I love racing, and both of them are starting to kick into high gear right now. So it's a perfect time for me, you know, us to get together and talk multiple things that both you and I enjoy.
Yeah, and first off, the racing side of things. What's going to be new for Craig Mintz in 2014, or is it pretty much going to be staying the course of what you've done the past couple of years?
I would say it's going to be pretty close to what we've done in previous years. We've purchased a new tow vehicle and rig, so it's a lot easier for my family to travel and my team to travel. So we're going to do a little bit more traveling, but I still think we're going to stay close to home and run the fast deal. It's still hard not to, just because, you know, when you can run close to home, run the same racetracks you have for so long, and you can run it for $10,000, it's just so hard not to run it, you know, so that's probably what we'll do. We'll hit a few, local, bigger shows, you know, like the Doty, stuff of that nature. But I don't see us, you know, going to Knoxville or anything like that. It's just, you know, something we're not ready for yet. I mean, we will be, but, just not right now.
And you've always had a pretty good picture of what you've wanted to do, and you made sure you can do it within your team's needs. You guys did try an all-star effort once, and since then it seems like you've kind of scaled back and you've kind of done what the team is, what you can do within your means, but you've done it well. And it's something that we're starting to see more across the country as a trend of, well, I could go travel and beat my head against the wall, or I could go run this many races and be really competitive.
Yeah, I mean, when we ran the All-Stars in 07, we had a good time, and, you know, had a great time. And I think it was a little bit of myself being too eager and not necessarily and to a little younger yet to, you know, understand what you need to go fast and be good at it. I mean, we had a great team, and we were funded, but, you know, there was a lot of things that, you know, we were right on the edge on. If we, you know, had a bad night, it was going to set us back. And, you know, that whole season, when we went to Florida and destroyed two cars and blew a motor up, I mean, it was pretty much our whole season. So with us having to scale back that year, it taught me a lesson of being able to plan out how much you got here and how much budget you have to be able to raise, you know, the shows that you want to raise. I think that some of the issue with, you know, some teams, you know, they go, oh, we're going to go right here, 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 and here, and they don't realize that, you know, yeah, you have $50,000 to win race, you're not the King's Royal, but, you know, if you, the likelihood of a local guy winning that is very slim to none, and just to make the show is an honor, you know, but if you go down there and wad a race car up for $1,000 or for $100, you know, you just totally, and if you got money to throw away, that's no big deal, but if your budget's tight, it just doesn't make sense. You know, I'd rather be competitive at Fremont Attica, where you have a pretty good shot of making some, you know, being in the green at the end of the night, rather than, you know, being on a tight budget and going to Eldora or going to a World of Outlaws show where you have to crush the issue to be any good. You know, and you destroy a race car and you're down. So we take a schedule every year, make a budget of saying, this is where we're going to race. And, you know, if we get ahead of schedule or, you know, we win a bunch of races, yeah, we're going to go, you know, press our luck a little bit because we have, you know, we have the ability to, but, you know, we hurt a couple motors or we hurt, you know, a couple race cars, you know, we scale back even more. That way we're still able to put the best car we can on the racetrack and still go racing. I mean, I don't want to travel to Fremont Attica and be on a shoestring budget where I'm not putting the best I can on the racetrack to win races. So, you know, we try to be able to provide our crew and myself a quality car to win races, and we've done that the past 2 years.
Craig Mintz joining us here, getting ready for the Attica Raceway Park opener, hopefully this Friday if Mother Nature cooperates. But, you know, Attica, to me, it's an interesting place. It's gone through changes over the years of the racetrack. They've changed the banking various times and stuff. But it seems like no matter what changes they do to the racetrack, whatever, it seems like it's always a very competitive, very good race. Is it a racetrack where you, as a driver, do you feel like you don't necessarily have to start up front there to be able to win?
No, I mean, you don't have to start up front, on a local show to start to win there. You know, an all-star show or, you know, a bigger show like that, you might have to be closer to the front. But I'm pretty confident that, you know, if we're starting in the top 12, you know, we can come up and win. It's really difficult at our, you know, with how competitive we are around here, with the quality of cars that we got on a nightly basis to start 20th or 18th, it's going to be a tall feat because this is, you know, you got a Byron Reed or a Tim Schaefer or Dale Blaney that come in or Greg Wilson on a regular show. You start them up front, it's going to be tough to catch them. But, you know, you start 10th, 12th, you know, and you get a couple cautions and a few breaks, it's definitely possible. And Attica Raceway Park has always put a quality racetrack, or, you know, to us drivers to be able to race. It's not this one group, you know, to their, to what they can help. Obviously, with rain sometimes hurts stuff and drought stuff hurts, but, you know, they've always put a race track that we can have four or five grooves and be competitive and have a, and put on a good show. I know that's one thing that they're proud of, and it's one thing that I always enjoyed going to Attica Raceway Park and going, hey, you know, you're coming into a state facility, you're coming into a great facility. And, you know, I know a lot of race car drivers that look forward to coming, you know, to Attica Raceway Park.
Craig, you know, one thing, too, is this year you're going to be qualifying at certain shows at Attica, but they're doing the format like a lot of the late models and even the Canadian Sprint Car Nationals we've seen where you're qualifying against the same cars you draw in your heat race. What do you think of the new qualifying format for Attica at the big shows this year?
I like it. You know, I'm a big fan of qualifying. I hate having $50,000 race cars and we're drawing 10-cent bingo numbers to determine your entire night. I've never been a fan of that. I didn't think it was fair from the start. You know, I like it. I'm not really sure the format of how everything's going to work out. I'm going to have to obviously see how it, you know, works out. I'm sure they're going to have to tweak something here and there, but, you know, we've always been able to put on a good show there, and I don't think that this will change anything. But, and I've always been a fan of qualifying. I don't, like I said, you draw bad pill numbers, you start in the back, you know, you know, it's no big deal, you know, to pass a few race starts, but you're still not in the show. So, you know, with qualifying, if you start in the back, you deserved it because you didn't qualify very well. So, you know, some of that, you know, it kind of equals things out, and it makes things a little bit more on the driver. You know, sometimes you draw bad luck and you go out really late. You don't get the quality of racetrack that, you know, the guy that goes out first or vice versa. But, you know, I'd rather take the luck of the draw where it's at least in my hands, you know, and I can control it. I've always had a thing that, you know, like when I go gambling or something, I hate playing on like slot machines because I feel like the computer's going to know if I'm going to win or not. You know, and if I'm playing cards, you know, like, you know, blackjack or something like that, I have control of the cards and I have the control of my own destiny, kind of. So, you know, at that point, I feel a little bit more in control. So it's kind of the same thing I feel with qualifying. You know, you set your own table and, you know, that kind of, you know, it's easier for me to go in at it to Raceway Park knowing that.
And it's kind of unusual for me to say this. It feels a little weird, but you're now pretty much considered a veteran driver. Even though you're a younger guy, you've been at this for over a decade now, which is just baffling to me when I think about that. But you know, what makes sprint car racing still fun for Craig Mintz? I mean, you've been doing this for quite a while now. You still come to the racetrack, and you're just as focused as attentive as ever. Why is sprint car racing still fun for Craig Mintz?
That's a good question. I think it's more of, you know, the being competitive. I'm competitive in anything I do, whether it's Monopoly, or whether it's, you know, obviously racing. You know, with me being a basketball coach, I think that's what gets me going in basketball too, is being able to be competitive. You know, after I graduated basketball, from school, I couldn't play anymore. So I kind of lost that competitive part in me, and I wanted it back. So obviously I do that. But, you know, I like being able to go to the racetrack, and it's nice to, you know, spend time with my dad and do things, you know, kind of like the father-son things, you know, that any guy, you know, parents do that with their son. So, you know, it's kind of nice to be able to do that. And my wife enjoys it, and my son enjoys it, and hopefully my newly born will enjoy it when she gets older. So, you know, we purchased a toter home, so it's going to be much easier for me to be able to take everybody and enjoy it. You know, I've already pretty much told myself that I'm way too old to, you know, do this for a living, but it's something that we kind of enjoy going to the racetrack and you know, just being with friends. You know, I mean, we look back, we were talking about it the other night, if we sit down and you look at our friends, you know, most of them revolve around racing. So when we're not racing, we don't get to see those people, and it's just kind of a big family. So it's, you know, it's nice to be able to go there, you know, and see everybody every week and be able to mingle with other families and talk to them.
And you mentioned you are a basketball coach. So how did your ladies team do this most recent season?
We did okay. It was very difficult for us. And I went to a school that the program was down tremendously, and we're trying to rebuild it. So we're getting better. You know, we lost first round of the sectionals, but, you know, we played really well. We can't say we didn't, and we lost by two to the number one seed. So, you know, it was, you know, we played well. We just didn't execute a couple things, and, you know, we're getting better. And we're seeing strides in the program. So, I mean, that's exactly what we've asked for, and what we've asked of the girls. So I think it's just a little bit of time. An effort that they just, you know, we're finally getting to. Next year will be the kids, you know, that come up from freshmen that we've gotten to work with when they were in sixth and seventh grade. You know, so now we're going to finally see the product of our work instead of, you know, the previous coaches, you know, where we felt that, you know, their program was not adequate to today's. You know, it would have been okay in the 80s and 90s, but, you know, times have changed and you need to work with these kids. You know, when they're in fifth and sixth grade, that's when habits start. That's when, you know, especially at that age, when they start learning their hand-eye coordination starts to get better. You know, they start wanting to be more athletic. So I think a lot of good coaches start young and get them interested in basketball. So we're finally starting to do that and get there. So, but yeah, I enjoy it. And I think this will be my seventh year as a coach, so it's been a good time.
And what do you think, Craig Mintz, the coach? Who does your style closely resemble to somebody that might be a household name or someone we might have heard of coaching wise? I'm trying to imagine what it's like to be coached by you. It'd be interesting. Who do you think your style most resembles?
Coach Boeheim from Syracuse. I mean, he's not the energetic coach that you would really think, you know, that you would really see. But for those who are listening, if you watch a Syracuse game, my team plays pretty close to a Syracuse. They like to play up tempo. I like to play up tempo. I love to play zones. And I love disciplined basketball. And Coach Boeheim at Syracuse has got his guys. You know, they didn't do very well in the tournament, but you know, they play discipline. You know, they listen to their coach. You know, and they love basketball, and that's kind of what my girls do. They love basketball, and you know, they're very disciplined. So I mean, we're getting there, and you know, there are times that it's pretty comical of me. You know, I get pretty upset, or I'm chasing the refs around, but you know, hardly ever do it. You know, with girls, you got to find the fine line of being able to, you know, express your displeasure, but you know, not yell so much that you know they turn into an emotional roller coaster. So, you know, it's difficult to find that fine line, but, you know, there are times that I get pretty upset, and then there's times that, you know, I'm laughing. So I do a 360 quite a bit with the girls, and I always enjoy it.
And that's exactly what I picture of Craig Mintz, the coach, and also Sprint Car Driver coming on the line. Now, when your girls see what you do for your hobby in the summer that might not be as familiar with it, what's their reaction when they've seen you race the sprint car, or they go to a sprint car race and go, oh, my word, that's my coach doing that?
They all get a pretty good giggle out of it. You know, I've had a couple of them, you know, come to the races, and they've enjoyed it and actually have come back. You know, so that's a positive thing for the, you know, the sprint car world, but, you know, they always, you know, always have a good time, and they always come down afterwards and, you know, say, hey, coach, and see how I'm doing. And then they're, you know, wanting when open gym's going to be and all this thing. So it's a positive thing to see them come down, and, you know, you build a relationship with the girls, you know, that, you know, I would, you know, if one of them called me right now to come get them, to take them somewhere, that, you know, we would do that as coaches. I mean, we do pretty much anything we can for them girls to, you know, get them through, and, you know, our job is to help them get ready for the the next step in their life, and not only teach them basketball, but teach them, you know, how things are going to work in real life, you know, and get them ready for college. So, you know, and we've had a couple girls go on to play college ball, so that's been, you know, kind of fun to teach them, you know, and point them in the right direction of, okay, this is what it's going to be like in college, and be able to understand it. But it's pretty cool to see them come down to the races, and you know, they talk about it, and they wear Craig Mintz shirts, and a bunch of them are Nate Duffel fans, and, you know, Caleb Griffiths fans, and so it's kind of cool that they're in practice, they'll have different shirts on, so it's kind of cool.
It's just part of the Ohio sprint car life here with Craig Mintz joining us on the line. And another facet that you're involved in, you're very talented in the graphics side of the world. How busy are you right now with the last-minute people trying to get their stuff wrapped before the race season starts?
More busier than I ever have been, which is a positive thing in certain ways. But, you know, I haven't even touched, you know, as far as graphics on my stuff, and it's sometimes it's kind of a pain, but, you know, my customers come first, and we've had a lot of them this year wait to the last minute and come in, and it's not my normal customers. The ones that normally wait got maybe myself in December, and the ones that are normally earlier are now late. So, you know, we're pretty busy. Matter of fact, the printer's running right now. Before I left work today to print a couple wing wraps, and I'll get those done tomorrow, and, you know, I'll make sure everything's done for them, whether I got to work through the night. And, you know, most of my customers, all my customers are almost always taken care of before the first week, as long as they don't give it to me on the Friday of. So, you know, right now we're pretty busy doing a lot of wraps and sprint cars. We've actually dedicated this whole week to dirt car racing, just because we know that, you know, last minute, oh, we bought an extra wing and need this. So, you know, we're ready for that, and if anybody needs anything, just let me know.
He says he's busy, but I can pretty much assure you that 09 car is not going to show up with duct tape numbers first at the Raceway Park.
No, I will make sure that that thing goes there all decked out.
For sure. Craig Mintz joining us. Well, Craig, it's always great to have you on. And one final question. Fremont Speedway has this Legends race coming up with the 305s, and we're starting to hear some of the names come out of this thing. Is this a race that as soon as you're out of the car, you're going to be heading to the fence to watch, probably? Because there's going to be some interesting people in this thing.
It's going to be really cool, and I was lucky enough to see the whole list. Before it was released, the final list. So I'm not going to spoil who I think's going to win it, because their name hasn't been released. But you know, there's some names on this list that can, you know, not too long ago can wheel a race car. So I'm not you know, I'm thinking, holy moly, this is going to be a good race. And, you know, there's a few that I think that are going to be fun to watch. There's going to be a few that I'm really interested to see how they do behind the wheel. You know, and I think it's bringing, you know, and the, you know, Rich Farmer's doing the, you know, great promoting it. It's bringing the buzz back to, you know, Fremont Speedway. So I think, you know, that night is going to be packed. You know, there's going to be cars everywhere, and it's going to be good to see, you know, some of the guys that, you know, I think like Mark Keegan that got out of it a little too early back in a car, or, you know, guys of that nature. You know, there's, I mean, and some of the guys that I didn't get to see race, I get to see in a race car again. So, you know, that's kind of fun to be able to see. It's going to be fun to see. I'm interested to see who's on the gas and who's not. And I'm really interested to see that, who's going to be out of gas and going to be needing oxygen at the end of the race.
Yeah, for sure. Now, if you still had a 305 car, who would be your pick to put in the Legends race at Fremont?
I would probably pick probably Mark Keegan, just because I've raced against him. I have a lot of respect for him, and I know he can still wheel a race car. So, and he's good on equipment, so I don't have to worry about, you know, him tearing up a race car. And I know he can put it to the front. So, I mean, as far as the combinations go, you know, it's still being able to wheel a race car, and being able to be good on equipment, because obviously you don't want him destroying a race car because you got to race that night. So, you know, it's kind of nice to be able to, you know, would be nice to see him in my race cars, but, you know, we don't own one. I've told Farmer that if this goes well, we need to start doing it in 410 cars.
There we go. Well, Craig, I really appreciate you taking time out for us, and wish you best of luck coming up. And hopefully we have a chance to talk to you again mid-season, because if you're on here, it must mean you did something right.
That's right. Hopefully you're on here and we're doing something right. We went last year without a win. We won at Attica, but it's been almost 2 years since we've won at Fremont, but we win championships. So we're staying consistent, but we're just not getting victory lane. So hopefully this year we'll get past that second mark and get into the victory lane.
All right. Thanks, Craig, and have a great evening.
You too.
Craig Minns joining us on the line. We're going to wrap things up on TJ Slideways Live after the break.
Engine Pro, the nation's leading specialty engine parts distributor, featuring name brand engine parts and custom engine kits sold by professional rebuilders. With 29 distribution centers providing engine builders and machine shops across the country with a full line of brand name internal engine components at competitive prices. Engine Pro is committed to building the success of their customers by offering competitive pricing, innovative programs, and knowledgeable sales representatives. For more information, visit our website at engineproparts.com. It pays to know a pro. Engine Pro.
If you're looking to add a little edge to your racing program, repair your engine, maybe even look into a new engine, Bailey Racing Engines of Coldwater, Michigan is a fine supporter of TJSlideways.com. Visit them online at BaileyEngines.com or call them at 517-278-8488.
Tired of having black headers that rust and wear out too quickly? Then you need to get some Rocket Headers. Rocket Header produces exhaust for 360 and 410 sprint car engines, dirt and pavement, with mufflers and turnouts. Stainless steel construction, TIG welding, and polished finish make Rocket Headers the best value in the open wheel racing exhaust market. For more information on where to buy Rocket Headers, visit their official website at rocketheaders.com.
TJ Buffenbarger here for the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa. The Hall of Fame continues to promote the future of sprint car racing by preserving its past. The museum is located in Knoxville, Iowa, and is open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday from noon to 5 p.m. On race nights, the museum will stay open until 7 o'clock. Don't forget, race fans, one of the best ways that you can support the Hall of Fame is buying a membership. They start at just $25, and a basic membership gets you and a guest free admission to the museum and a 10% discount off in the museum store. Also, check with the Hall of Fame for suite tickets on the second and third floor for the 2013 Knoxville season. You can get information on all of this by going to SprintCarHOF.com. The National Sprint Car Hall of Fame. Spain.
If you're looking for new or used shocks or repair for your shocks or bump stop kits, make sure to check out Slade Shock Technology. Eric Slade has experience from sprint cars to NASCARs. He was in shocks before it was trendy, and now that's the hot thing in racing. You need to get your shock program in shape. Visit www.sladeshocktechnology.com for everything they offer. Slade Shock Technology. Get with the program. Get your shocks in shape.
There's a buzz in the bleachers, a rumble on the pavement, and the sweet smell of sprint car speed is in the air as Muncie Racing brings you the fastest short track event on earth. Watch as the most daring lead foots in the land stand on the gas and rock it around one of the fastest half miles in America. There are records to be broken and racing royalty in the pits. It's a flat-out, foot-on-the-floor sprint car fiesta, and you can't find this brand of adrenaline-soaked action anywhere else.
Welcome back to TJ Sideways Live. First, I want to thank Alan Brown and Craig Mintz for joining us on tonight's program. What a stellar show. That's the kind of stuff we like to do. That's some great racing discussion with those two. And Craig and I both agree, both of our brackets for March Madness are basically in the dumpster at this point. So if you're doing well in your office pool, congratulations. You picked better than the coach, and you picked better than the host. Now, you know, a lot of great things announced last week with that Berlin show. Of course, that is in our backyard. We're going to be doing a lot of neat stuff leading into that. But just a note about the races coming up in the next couple of weeks. First of all, Friday night at Attica, got a note from Rex LeJune. As of right now, the races are still on at Attica. They are going to make a final decision on Wednesday on the status of opening night. But as of now, steam forward, plan ahead, and stay calm and get ready to go racing at Attica. And just a reminder, Saturday is still the rain date for the opener at Attica Raceway Park this Friday. So if they don't get it in Friday, Saturday is still an option for Attica Raceway Park. So keep that in mind, fans, when planning. And of course, we're going to be down there at Attica in 2 weeks for the HD Supply Spring Nationals, which is what our show is going to center around. We're getting everything lined up, but we're going to center around that. We're going to touch on the No Way Out 40 next week as well. But best of luck to everyone in Ohio. Glad to see Atomic Speedway got their opener in this past week, and congratulations to Jim Neer for the victory out there. But you know, things are really, the last week of March and the first week of April is always when we shift into high gear, and we encourage you to stay tuned to TJSideways.com. We're going to have all the results, all the information, and a lot of neat sidebar stuff from all the races we're going to go and cover in person this year. So I don't want to let the cat out of the bag yet, but I think you're really going to like what we have to offer when we go to the racetrack. So thank you again for listening. We'll be back here again next Monday night at 8:00 p.m. Eastern. Thank you and good night.
Thank you for listening to this edition of TJ Sideways Live.